Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. And now, here are your hosts, Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto.
We're standing here in a cacao grove in the Redland, southwest of Miami. It's about 83 degrees. There's a light drizzle here. It's early summer. We're here with Christina
Favretto
and Ricardo Trillos in front of some cacao pods. Tell us about this tree.
This is a John tree. This must be about 3 or 4 years old. It's actually growing a lot of fruit. If we look around the tree, there are a lot of flowers blooming that eventually they're gonna turn into pods. We're very happy and hopeful that from this tree we're gonna get a lot of fruits. We can actually have right now in front of us, just from the same flower, 2 pods at a time. And for being a John tree, we have a large type of pod around it. And it's a beautiful color that's hard to describe. It's like greenish with some yellow, and definitely, you know, something good is gonna come out of this fruit.
Yeah, I would say it looks almost like a papaya. It's got a speckled skin. There's some yellow striations, some light green, and it's beautiful to see the actual pods right next to the flowers as well. So the little tiny fragrant flowers.
Yeah, this is the time of the year that the flowers are blooming, and humidity definitely takes a big part of that. They're gonna be giving us more fruit, and you know, throughout the months we're gonna be able to testify all these fruits growing, and from this tree we anticipate that we're gonna get at least 10 or 15 pods at a time very soon.
Now, we're standing here because Ricardo's been known as a chocolatier here in South Florida, doing bean-to-bar chocolate. But this is the first time that we're growing cacao down here, harvesting it, fermenting it, and then turning it into bars of chocolate.
Correct. Yes, I'm a chocolatier, but we are also chocolate makers, what's called bean-to-bar, and we started this bean-to-bar process here in Miami many years ago, and we received cacao beans from all over the world. And when we realized that we had the opportunity to actually grow and go through the process of farming this, I mean, this is something that's never been done, and we wanted to pioneer and take over that risk and that project. So it's a beautiful place. I mean, right now I'm basically doing that our farmers do for us. So I'm not only just receiving my beans and go ahead and roasting and making chocolate from there. No, I'm actually taking care of the first part, which is for me the most important part of the chocolate making process.
And does it have a new meaning for you to see it really from its infancy now? You're understanding it as at a deeper cellular level almost, what's going on.
When we travel to these plantations and you interact with the farmers, you know why, I mean, for all the things that they go through, and but you just spend certain amount of days now being able to just drive a few miles from home and be here all day, almost every day taking care of this. I mean, the respect for that process, the respect for them is definitely bigger, and you know, there's a lot of engagement in this process.
You've become a cacao whisperer.
Probably, you know, my goal is actually to bring as many people as I can here, and people that love chocolate and appreciate chocolate, they will understand what I'm talking about when I bring them here and they look around, they say, oh wow, I've never seen this, I never knew this, and definitely this is something that hopefully gets the word out and people appreciate what we're trying to do for Miami and the community.
I would imagine there's maybe 12 people on this earth who don't like chocolate, so I think you will have a built-in audience.
They say that 9 out of 10 like chocolate and the other one is lying.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, one question here. South Florida is known for growing tropical fruits and certainly citrus back in the day, but we've never seen growing cacao here. Now, you're from Venezuela, arguably one of the world's great sources of fine chocolate. How do you see South Florida playing into this? Well, how come we haven't seen chocolate growing here before?
Well, I mean, cacao grows only 20 degrees above or below the equator line. We're a bit off that. For those of you who don't believe in climate change, this is a proof of that. Okay, that's I can't say this enough. Okay, it's a great thing that's happening in South Florida. For me, it's a blessing, But on the other side, I'm like, I know that there's something wrong within this process. It's basically that it's growing, and it's growing more and more. Every harvest is larger than the previous one, which means that it's getting hotter and hotter. I guess South Florida, they never pay attention to cacao because it's hard to find. It's hard to find. When you ask people, have you seen cacao trees before? They always talk about the only two trees that Fairchild has. And there are some other places that they have one or two, but they've never seen that many trees together because nobody have ever planted that many trees together, hoping and as a visionary that this can be something that definitely can grow here. So Patch of Heaven Gardens, they did. They stepped up a few years ago, and with Roberto Del Cid and Fred Herber, they're the horticulturists here, and I mean, they took a major responsibility on growing all these trees and planting this amazing, amazing cacao area. And, you know, with a lot of love, a lot of, you know, care, it's happening. It's happening. And there's no other place here in South Florida that have that many cacao trees together. And we actually plan to plant at least 1,000 more.
Wow. Well, let's find out a little bit more about the process of taking these harvested cacao pods and turning it into chocolate.
Okay.
We're looking here at the harvested cacao pod, kind of a tough exterior. You've cracked it open and we see all the little beans inside.
Yep.
Yeah. And to me, it looks a little like a papaya. I'm not a tropical person originally. So, but when you break it open, the pods look like giant corn, individual kernels of corn, mm-hmm. except they're a creamier white.
Yeah, all the beans in here, keep in mind something, that every single pod can be a different genetic, and what you see in one pod, you won't see it in another, unless it's 100% exactly the same. So some of the pods that we have here, you can find like 80 beans inside, and some others, the beans are a third of the size of this mm-hmm. one that we have here. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. You know, we work with some cacaos that the beans are very large. And at the same time, we've been working with some other cacaos from Mexico, for example. We had one from Chiapas that the beans was, I mean, like a dime size.
Oh, wow.
And I smelled it. It smells like the inside of a pumpkin. If people who are listening to this have never seen the inside of a cacao pod or smelled it, it does smell like fresh pumpkin.
It does. And also, it can smell a bit sweet. I always point this as lychee. I always refer to lychee because it's easy for people to figure out how it looks like and actually how it tastes like. You see the beans are covered for a white flesh. It's called pulp. Mm-hmm. Cacao pulp, or in Spanish we call it baba de cacao, and that's basically the next step.
We can eat this.
Yes, yeah. You can eat it exactly like lychee if you want to
give it a try.
Taste it.
Right. One of the pods.
Yes,
so it's kind of wet.
It is wet. Mm. There's a lot of water content there. It's kind of sweet. Some of them are more acid than others.
Oh, I think it's delicious.
Really?
I think it's sweet and tangy.
Tart.
Tangy at the
There's
same time.
There's a tanginess
yes.
to it. And I bit into the seed because I'll eat everything. And I like it because I can taste the incipient chocolateness
of it.
It's
like a green mango.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The pulp actually will give you a lot of hints of the next notes of the cacao. Okay. The flavor within the pulp, the skin within the pulp is going to help us to develop the flavor of the chocolate through the fermentation. And here, I mean, this is a major step for us to taste it and to picture what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
What's
okay.
going to come?
So let's talk about what's to come. So we're going to take all these, talk us through the next step here.
So this is what we do now. We harvest all the pods, okay? Carefully we crack open it and we remove all the seeds, keep the seeds in a container. And then all those seeds are going through a fermentation box, which is basically made out of wood. And this is like big squares where the beans are going to stay there. They're gonna be covered by banana leaves and burlap bags as well. You want to, and what we want to do there is increase the heat. Okay, by increasing the heat, the pulp that we mentioned before, it's gonna evaporate, it's gonna disappear. But during that process, a lot of sugars and alcohol will help us to develop lactic acid, and the lactic acid will help to develop the flavor of the chocolate as well. Okay, so fermentation is one of the key parts of
a good chocolate if it's not properly fermented.
Now this
good is going to come out of that.
This is steamy Miami, so I'm thinking the fermentation process, how long does it take? Not too long to get it to where you need it to be?
Well, the fermentation process depends on so many factors. It depends on the weather, depends on what type of beans, the genetics and all that, okay? So it can take up to 7 days if you want to. The highest quality cacao beans, they need less fermentation process because basically what you do with your fermenting, you're developing flavor that some beans already have, okay? So if they have that flavor, you don't have to extra ferment or ferment from a longer period of time. So it's all about, you know, studying what you have, and based on that, you'll decide how long it takes.
Now we saw in the fermenting box that this, what we're looking at now, this very juicy, white, clean-looking little kernels have turned into what look like cranberry beans that are kind of seen better days.
Yeah.
They're going to change the color. They go for light white. They're going to start looking brown, okay? And it's because they're drying, okay? The pulp, it's not there anymore, okay? And the fermentation process, there's a lot of heat within that fermentation box that actually is like, I would say 20 degrees higher than where we are right now, our environment right now. And that will change the color of the bean. With then the drying step will definitely, have a complete light brown or dark brown color, depending on the genetics.
So drying it, so once the fermentation is complete, what happens next? What do you do?
Once it's fermented, then we go for drying. Drying, it's another key part of chocolate making because we make sure that all the moisture, any type of water content within the bean, it's removed, okay? Because after it's fermented and dried, you can storage the beans for many years. Mm-hmm. I mean, up to 2 years or months, I would say up
Does
to
months.
Does
the aging change the flavor? Is it like fine wine, older, better?
Or? Not. It can change for bad if you don't storage them well, okay? Mm-hmm. So it has to be a temperature control place, a certain humidity, okay? Otherwise, can ruin the flavor. They can get moldy as well. So we definitely don't want that. And part of that is why we dry the beans. Okay, we dry the beans to make sure that all the water content is gone. And, you know, to...
And how do you do that? Do you put it in an oven? Do you?
No. We actually, you can have either drying tables, because they're specially made to dunk all the beans and let them sit. So that depends also of the quantity of many factors. Or, you know, what I do is I go old fashioned, like a concrete floor, and I dunk all the beans there, and then I move them certain time, certain hours per day.
So that's something you'd see in Venezuela, is these concrete floors covered in beans?
Well, it's funny, but in Venezuela and some parts of, especially in the coast, very close to the ocean, I mean, you're driving, like going to the ocean, and on the side you see, I mean, big lines of cacao beans drying there, because that's the space that they have.
Yeah.
There's a Chuao, there's one of the most famous places for cacao. They have, they dry in front of the church. They have a big concrete area there, and they do mountains of cacao, and they dry it there.
So. Is it, and it's cooperative farms, so they respect one another's cacao spaces, right?
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. Obviously, I mean, in cacao, like everything, there are some exceptions. Mm-hmm. But the farmers are a key part of this, and they try to you know, stay together.
Now, at that point, you are, when you have the beans that you've harvested yourself or beans that you're buying, you're as a bean to bar chocolate maker here. Mm-hmm. At that point, you've got something that you're working with to turn that into chocolate bars.
Correct.
Okay.
That's actually the point that we start. We receive the beans fermented and dried, and we start from the roasting process, and we take over all. That's what bean to bar chocolate makers does. I mean, they receive fermented and dried, and they go over. Now, we're doing something that's called tree to bar. Like I always say, I feel like instead of moving forward, I'm going backwards because I'm getting more deep into the growing, into making my own. And tree to bar means that you're growing your own chocolate. You're growing your own beans, actually, not your own chocolate. You're growing your own beans that eventually are going to turn into chocolate. Okay, I mean, you can be a bean to bar, but tree to bar is different because you need to be in an area that happens. Okay, there's no way that being to our chocolate maker in New York can be a tree to bar, because cacao mm-hmm. trees will no never trees. Grow in New York. Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. So this is something that I take a lot of pride of.
So you got your beans, you roast them.
Correct.
How does that process impact the?
Fermenting and roasting are two key parts of chocolate making. Fermentation is optimal. You have a great chocolate, or you have a good chance. And then don't mess up with the roasting, because mm-hmm. Roasting is like, I always say, like, I always use the example of being a cardiologist. Mm-hmm. You can have many patients with high blood pressure, but you can never prescribe the same medication mm-hmm. to all of them.
Got it.
Okay, so cacao is exactly the same. That's the beauty of it. That's the sexiness of it for me. And you have to study each one of the beans.
The beans tell you what how they want to be
roasted. Exactly. And what I like also, there's a lot of trial and error, which it makes it intriguing. It's not the same right. thing every single day, okay? It's not the same thing every single day because...
It's an art.
I see. Yeah. Like I said, it's alchemy, it's chemistry. Yeah. So there's a lot of those things in high school that were kind of boring as far as chemistry and all that. You end up working with that a lot.
But it comes in handy.
I know, of course.
And so you're the cacao whisperer, but the beans are all also whispering to you. So it's a nice synergy.
Those are the ones who talk to me.
They talk to you.
So I have here one of your cacao chocolate bars here. There's a lot of steps to get from what we've discussed to get to this beautiful, shiny, dark brown chocolate bar.
Yes, yes. I mean, we're at the roasting step now. After we roast the beans, we wino the beans, which basically we break them up and we remove the shell from the cocoa nib. Those cocoa nibs go into the stone ground machines and they're gonna turn into a paste. Okay, they turn into a paste because cacao basically has two ingredients in there, the cacao mass and the cacao butter. Cacao butter is the fat content, and because of the heat of the friction, it will help with liquidity. Okay, so that will turn into a paste, and then you incorporate any other ingredient that you like, sugar, etc. Okay, so after that, chocolate stays for a while in the machine. We also, depending on what type of chocolate, we know for how long you're gonna, after adding the sugar, you're gonna keep it, and then for how long you're gonna conch it, which is basically the last part that takes care of the quality of it, and then the soft and silky taste. And after that is ready. I mean, we storage the chocolate for a few weeks, a few months, depending on what you want to do. And we work ahead of time. And that aging process also helps to develop more flavors, like mm-hmm. the one you were mentioning mm-hmm. before. Okay. And then we temper the chocolate and we turn it into chocolate bars.
And I see that you have flavor notes here. I'm looking at your beautiful labels mm-hmm. And caramel, vanilla. And that's all coming really from the roasting, the bean, the temperature it grew up in. It's like a fine wine with different notes. So just like
I said. I've been trying to explain this to people. People don't understand. I mean, people love specialty food, but mm-hmm. they don't understand that chocolate is one of them.
Yes.
Okay. They love wine. I mean, people love scotch, for mm-hmm. example, which can be very complex. Bourbon as well. Cigars also are very complex. Cheeses.
Yes.
But they don't see chocolate as complex as
and,
can be.
And I think we're going to try one right now.
And tell people what we're...
I'll tell you how it goes. So next time you get a chocolate mm-hmm. bar, the first thing you had to do is look at it. It must be shiny. It must be pretty. Mm. Okay, it must be bright. That means that it was properly stored and it was actually properly made, okay, as far as temperature. Then smell it, okay? It has to smell like chocolate, mm-hmm. but it can give you an idea of maybe some notes, exactly like a wine, okay? Mm-hmm. Then, because we're using our five senses here, sight, touch, smell, hear, and mm-hmm. taste, the touch, it shouldn't melt too fast. Obviously, I mean, right now we're in the middle of the patch of urban gardens and it's kind of hot. So eventually they're gonna melt, but it shouldn't happen too fast, mm-mm. okay? Then just break it, you put it close to your ear, and you're gonna hear a snap when you break it, okay? That crisp also tells you that was properly done.
She just did,
here it is.
Snap. There you go. Okay, that's something.
And I smelled it.
The snap is very important for the chocolate makers, and also as far as tempering, which is a key part, I mean, we take good pride of a good snap. Okay, and then just let it taste, let it melt in your mouth. Don't chew the chocolate. because it's that. Not gum.
I let it melt.
Let it melt slowly. You can close your eyes. You can, I don't know, just get into your sense on whatever you name it and think what it tastes like. Okay, what we do is called single bean or single source. We basically from a farm, we source from there and we make the chocolates from there. And the other ingredient is sugar. That's about it. Okay, mm-hmm. But what we get from Dominican Republic, for example, we don't mix it with Costa Rica or we don't mix it with Guatemala or Belize or Haiti. No, we let each one of the plantations taste as is. So that's part of the storytelling process.
We're tasting the soil. The sunshine, the plants that grow around it.
What do you taste?
All of it. Okay, so before we started rolling, I talked about a dear taste that I remembered from chocolate in Italy that I grew up eating that was very, very good chocolate. And I am tasting that because it's not too bitter, not too sweet. I'm letting it melt in the back, kind of in the back of my tongue. And I'm actually tasting almost a slight cinnamon. And some coffee.
Coffee is what
coffee.
I
taste. Coffee is a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, this piece of chocolate is from Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you and say it caramel has like a, and coffee.
Caramel. I was saying more like a toffee. Mm-hmm. Like a toffee and coffee. Mm-hmm. It's definitely what. But within the coffee, I remember when I was in Mexico, they do they make a café de olla. When we add, they add some spices to it. And you can taste that. You can taste like some spices. I would say like maybe like you add nutmeg to your coffee or cinnamon, a blend of nutmeg, cinnamon to your coffee. That's why it
tastes
like.
There's a spice to it. Mm-hmm. And I would say that this is the kind of chocolate, especially if we eat it the way you just suggested, which makes complete sense, you don't need a lot of it. It is a fine tasting chocolate. It's like scotch. You don't need a glass full of scotch if it's a good scotch. Depending on your day, how
I know
going,
exactly. I was going to say that, but if you're going to drink a great scotch with a glass or two, you're fine because you take your time.
Mm-hmm.
You take your time to eat it. You take your time to enjoy it.
Appreciate
Same.
It.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to smoke a great cigar, you don't want to be bothered. Okay, you just want to smoke. You just want to enjoy the moment. Same with a great cheese. Okay, same with a great wine. So people must understand that craft chocolate is exactly the same. It is exactly the same.
And on that note, Ricardo Trio of Cow Chocolates, thank you so much for joining us. Christina
it's Favretto. So delicious. Thank you, Ricardo.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
With Edible South Florida, you've been listening to Tastes of the Tropics. Listen to our next podcast.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics with Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favretto on Edible Radio. For more information, visit ediblecommunities.com. This podcast is a production of Edible Radio, all rights reserved.